Step into the wealth elevator and join our 12,000 plus member community who have passively invested over $200 million to acquire over $2.1 billion in commercial real estate. Sign up by going to thewealthelevator.com/club, and here we go.
What's up, folks? On today's podcast, we are going to be doing the monthly office hours, the topics that I covered, the deals outside of the real estate world, private equity. Create a lot of these new charts, and I'm getting ready for our upcoming all-day masterclass on May the 4th. So be on the lookout for more details. The other topics include a nice flowchart on how exactly people are using infinite banking and accredited investing banking. And finally, we will wrap up with the horse race analogy that I think a lot of you guys are used to in the syndication and private placement world. But this is going to be the horse racetrack analogy 2.0, as I've introduced two additional players to the game. This week, I've went through a lot of the ITR reports, the U.S. wholesale trade of durable goods. That thing came out and they said, looks like it's going to be declining in 2024, then rising in 2026, which now you're starting to see the other asset classes, the other business groups, such as the industrial production slowing down based off of what's happening with the Fed increasing rates. The U.S. Consumer Price Index, it's been a bit of a tight labor market. We're also seeing a little bit of slowness this year. I think this is all good, right? Because we want to see these trends develop so the Feds can look at this and be like, hey, yeah, we did a good job. And now's the time to start lowering rates, which right now a lot of people are predicting in June, we'll start to see those rate cuts start to happen. So a lot of you new investors, this is really the time to get in as you're starting to look for deals within the sector. Single unit housing starts transition to their phase B, which is starting the accelerated growth, which started back in February. So if you're somebody who's a little scared, right, things have already been moving in the positive directions. And this is, I think, why people listen to this channel. And in the newsletter, I'll put more information about these reports in there so you can read it for yourself. But for those of you guys to get access to that, you need to be a part of our newsletter and club. You can sign up at thewealthelevator.com/club. Quick lesson on cap rates. A lower cap rate indicates a higher valuation, while a higher cap rate suggests a lower valuation. And let's use a hypothetical number of a net operating income or NOI of $1 million. And an NOI is your income minus your expenses. So this thing is producing $1 million of profit before the debt service or mortgage is paid. Now, at a 3% cap rate, the property's value would be $33 million. So the math is $1 million of NOI divided by the cap rate, which is 0.03. If you want to continue on with the math, a 4% cap rate, that would create the property's value at $25 million. The math on that would be $1 million of NOI divided by 0.04. Continuing on, a 5% cap rate, that would be a property value of $20 million. The math to get that would be $1 million divided by 0.05. And finally, a 6% cap rate would mean a lower value of $16 million by taking $1 million dividing by 0.06. Now, if this is confusing to you, I'll send the math in the newsletter here for you to digest it there. But as you're seeing, the slight increase in the cap rates significantly decreases the property's values. These cap rates are what's also known as the industry as the prevailing cap rate. So we'll talk with brokers or other people in industry and say, hey, Baltimore, what are Class B assets selling for? What's the prevailing cap rate, if you want to sound cool? And over there, I don't know exactly what it is, but the brokers may say, hey, Class B, maybe that's a 5.5 cap out there, right? So you take the NOI divided by that cap rate, and that's roughly what the property should be worth. Again, this is a inverse relationship between cap rates and property prices. Now, the recent rise in interest rates has led to an expansion of cap rates. As interest rates increase, investors often demand higher returns, resulting in higher cap rates. Consequently, property values may decrease, presenting opportunities for discerning investors. And that's what we are seeing right now. Properties have come anywhere from 15% to some places even 50% on where they were prior to the 2023 peak. And this is why it's such a favorable time to invest in real estate now due to this cap rate expansion. You're essentially getting in, you're buying things about a third off of the pricing it was. Now, diving beyond real estate, I've been exploring new territories. Several years ago, I joined different masterminds in the e-commerce and content website space. And we're going to start to see some offerings outside of the real estate world, because right now you're seeing a lot of good opportunities. Now, don't get worried, right? Real estate's been my golden goose to get up to this point. But this is, I think, as an investor, and I want to bring a lot of you guys along my journey. As an investor, you eventually get to a point where you expand the horizon. For, I think, most investors out there, you start with real estate because it's a hard asset. There's good lending. The banks like it too, right? I think it speaks to why people do real estate. And of course, the taxes. But you know, get to a point where you figure out what else is out there for higher returns. Sure, it's a little bit more riskier. Or maybe not, depending on what kind of business you're going into. But check out this week's Office Hours. And we're also going to be putting this in shorter YouTube forms. If you guys haven't checked out the YouTube channel lately, the team is creating videos there that are a little bit more focused as opposed to digesting the entire Office Hours as you do here on the podcast form. And the last, we got a giveaway this week. I'm recording the newest Wealth Elevator book. I'm super proud of it, and it's coming together really good. I'm actually reading it, and man, each chapter is pretty fire going out there. So if you guys want to get on our list to help us launch the book with some early reviews, I'll go ahead and give you guys some free chapters in there, audio version, so you can learn more about the book and get an advanced sneak peek there. To get more information, email us at team@thewealthelevator.com, and enjoy this week's podcast. All right. Welcome to Office Hours, folks. We're looking at new deal flow. Things are opening up, and even outside of the world of real estate, especially. The first concept I wanted to cover today, Tiger 21, if you are aware of organizations such as EO or YPO, this is that next level above that, where to join, you need to have a net worth of 10 or 30 million. I forget what it was exactly today. But you got some heavy hitters there, mostly business owners, because in my opinion, unless you're past the age of 60 and you've had this extra decade or two to have your money compound as a passive investor, it's really hard to get past eight figures, $10 million net worth, unless you've owned a business in your past. But either way, super wealthy people is the point. And if you break down their asset allocation mix, this is what it looks like. Big chunk of it is real estate. Next is private equity. It's essentially, you know, you own businesses through a, possibly through a syndicated form, or you directly own it yourself or with a few of your buddies. So that's what private equity is. Public equities is your stocks, bonds, mutual funds. Those are your traditional investments. And this is where I wanted to introduce the vernacular of traditional versus alternative investments. So on the left side, you have traditional. On the right side of this chart here, you have alternatives. And this is something I've always harped on, right? Traditional investments is all what we're taught to go into. And you want to move over to alternative investments, especially when your net worth is under $5 to $10 million. Number one, you get slightly better returns, or a lot better returns. And we'll get into that here in the next slide. But essentially, what we're talking about is public equities is your stocks, bonds, mutual funds. These traditional investments, you're not going to get the passive losses if you're not investing through real estate or getting Section 179 deductions there. If you're making over $300,000 a year, you really had to figure out how to implement real estate professional status, REPS, and get that Section 179 deductions from our TaxPal fund. Check out the tax guide. I put a new video up at the top of the page there. It's a short video of that ATM fund / the rep status strategy. Go to thewealthelevate.com/tax for that tax guide there. But you want to be moving from traditional to alternative investments. And also rounding out the other quadrant of the traditional investments in this ultra high net worth investor, you got some cash, maybe about 10%, some fixed income, hedge funds, commodities, miscellaneous in the single digits. Now, I think a big mistake people will look at, these guys are carrying about 13% cash. But you also got to realize these guys are $10, $30 million net worth and above. So this may not represent what you should be doing at home, especially if your net worth is only $1 to $2 million. In my opinion, when you're lower net worth, you've got to have your cash deployed. It's got to be out, namely alternative investments. But this is just broken up into, all right, what applies to me? I'm not to $10 million, $30 million net worth and above. This isn't necessarily what you should do, but this is the data of what actually is happening out there. As you can see on the left side, you have the net worth of people under $500,000 net worth. What is their asset allocation mix holdings surrounding? And 62% is the primary residence. As you go from the net worth of under $500,000 to $500,000 to $10 million is the next transformation group there. And then you can call the $10 million net worth and above the more mature group. You can see how that principal residence goes from 60% to 26% to 8%. Now, you can poke fun at my slide here and say, that's because their $4 million house is obviously a lot smaller portion of their $10 million estate. Most people out there have maybe $1 million, $2 million homes, and their net worth is $1 to $2 million. So that makes a lot of sense. You can see where the pension accounts is next big portion at 17%. And then you can see the general trend from the alternative investments to the traditional investments are getting a lot bigger there. At that point, you can see how people are transitioning to traditional investments to alternatives. People ask all the time, what is a good rate of return? Anywhere from 0 to 20% plus is per year is what you see out there for all kinds of deals. Now let's break it down. There's four levels to how your money is working for you. The first stage is your lazy money. This, I think, is what most of our parents or maybe even a lot of our colleagues out there who are pretty used to, which is 0 to 4% returns. These are typically found in online savings accounts or your normal savings account or your credit union or even the rewards checking. You can also put T-bills in here, where a lot of these are under that inflation rate of, let's put it around 3 or 4%. These are poor returns. We want to get our money out of these types of arrangements. And what I'll also add in here, if you've owned your house for any number of years, your money is probably lazy money in your house. Do the math yourself. If you put down 50 grand for your house several years ago, but today your equity in the house is $150,000, calculate the rate of return on $150,000. It's likely putting that money in this lazy money category. Now, obviously, I think a lot of us who are on the call today realize we need to get our money working more than this lazy money threshold, perhaps in the normal money threshold from 5 to 8%. Previously, when I graduated college, I was brainwashed to put my money in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs to get these so-called modest returns. And these are typically the returns. Maybe T-bills these days are touching the 5%, but that'll go away here in the next year or two, right? T-bills will go back into that lazy money mode, along with the savings bonds and those types of investments. But we want to do better than this normal money. And that's where it transitions up from the sophisticated money and family office money type of deals to the solid returns and higher returns from there. And you can see where, if you're paying attention to the coloring system here, normal money and lazy money is known to be more traditional investments. And when you break above that 8, 9, 10% rate of return and above per year, you're getting into these alternative investments. When you're in alternative investments, especially with real estate, you get these great tax benefits along the way. It's for you to even cut your tax rate by a quarter or a half. If you're able to do that little trick we do with the Section 179 losses and rep status, you're able to drive your income down to whatever you want, pay zero taxes legally doing something like that. And for some people making $400,000 a year, $500,000 a year, you could save $100,000, $200,000 pretty easily right there. And that is on top of your returns on this. And that's why we say the trifecta to this whole wealth elevator is these deals, which is what we're talking about here on this slide. But then the second part, which for some people who are high income earners, it's the taxes. And then, of course, accredited investor banking, infinite banking is a third part of the trifecta. But when you combo these three strategies together, it's an extremely powerful combination where you are able to get to where you want to be financially and get to these upper stratospheres that we talked about on this first slide of getting to that $10 million net worth threshold and above. So what is sophisticated money? In 2000, I graduated college and I was stuck in this normal return money, the 6 to 8% in the mutual funds that Vanguard or Fidelity offered me. And it went up and down like a roller coaster. And then I bought a rental property and then realized like, wow, I'm making like 20 something percent return on my money. I'm not even like doing much work and effort. I wasn't even doing that high risk burst strategy. And if you guys don't trust me, or if it's new to you, you can go to thewealth.com/returns. I did a little whiteboard exercise where I broke down the four ways you make money through the real estate, which is cash flow, the tax savings, the fact that the tenant is paying down your mortgage for you, the equity buildup, and then the appreciation on the asset. And that's where I was able to get into these upper stratospheres. But I get it. Not everybody wants to flip houses or own rental properties directly, especially investors who are over $1 million net worth, where you really start to worry about the legal implications, right? I think that's where syndications and private placements came in for me. And I think it comes in for a lot of you guys out there who are worried about if there's a murder at the property or somebody drowns in the pool or if a simple slip, trip, or fall. Or we've had it where there was a tenant sleeping in the roof and the roof caved in and then they wanted to put in a lawsuit. That stuff happens all the time. And that's where being a passive limited partner makes a lot of sense. Plus, the debt is not getting in your own personal name. You're not the loan guarantor. The key principals within the general partnership are taking on that liability. As you move up on this threshold, you're probably asking, how do I get into these like 13, 14, even 20% plus returns on your money? And this puts you in the stratosphere that a lot of you guys listening may not be able to hit. This requires you to be more of an active investor and maybe get involved in developments or invest outside of the world of real estate. Now, in a way, real estate is in this stratosphere. It's limited in terms of returns. I think that's why a lot of us are gravitated to real estate, the hard asset, and it doesn't fluctuate too much. Therefore, you've got to use some leverage, and the banks give you great leverage on this asset class because of its stability. But there are other types of investments out there. If you're new to the wealth elevator, I would probably not even think about this stuff to invest in it until you've been in our group for maybe about a year or two. But I wanted to just put it on your radar. And this is essentially what this world looks like. See all those jumbled up circles in the bottom. So on this left side, you've got these lower risk types of investments. You see all those, they're all little circles to you guys. We'll dive into exactly that here in a little bit. But all those are in the world of real estate, the real estate hard assets. And now as you start to get into this other side, these are higher risk types of investments. With comes higher risk, comes more reward. And in a way, and maybe this slide doesn't really depict this, but there's a bit of a asymmetric aspect to the more risk you take, typically the more returns you get. So if you see on the y-axis here on the left side, you can see where these are more in talking in terms of equity multiples, not particularly percent returns. So a 2x equity multiple means 100% return. A 5x equity multiple, believe that's 1,000%. I don't know what a 10x equity multiple, that's, who cares? I mean, we made a boatload of money, right? But if you follow this chart, and I kind of place loosely, Bitcoin is a lot more of a risk than any real estate type of project. Even today, even with the ETFs and roads in place, it's still pretty risky. Not as risky as it was like 2 or 3 years ago. You've got a ability to still make great returns in a short period of time. The next on the list is private equity, right? Investing in businesses. And this is a big world and a big range too. You could be investing in very stable type of businesses, lawyer businesses, engineering firms, different online SaaS businesses, things that are very stable, or it could be more venture-ish, more higher return, higher risk type of private equity. So that's a big world that I think a lot of folks, at least myself speaking, my first 10 years of investing, which was all in real estate, I wasn't aware of these different multiverses. And if people who have watched the Marvel movies, it's like the guys on Earth knew nothing about the folks in the movie Guardians of the Galaxy, right? But in a way, what we're doing here is we're combining the different heroes of the universe here and giving you a bigger picture. And that's been my whole passion with this Wealth Elevator project is ascend to that next floor, the next couple floors ahead, and figure out what are the people that initially it was like, what are the people that are $1 to $10 million net worth doing? And I did that. I brought it back and it'll be in the new Wealth Elevator book. If you guys want to get access to that, you can go on Amazon. Right? What are people who are even higher net worth? What are the folks that join Tiger 21 doing in that $10 to $30 million range or the $50 million range and plus, or what we call in the Wealth Elevator book, the pet house and beyond, where you go up in your little Willy Wonka chocolate factory glass elevator and you shoot off to wherever you want, not to mention flying private jets and stuff like that. To continue on this chart, this is where you start to get into venture capital types of investments, VC deals, or you become an angel investor. Now, it's not for everybody. These types of deals, it's a very low rate of even getting your money back. It's often known as a crapshoot. Some people will say, at best, 9 times out of 10, you lose your money, or maybe 1 times out of 100, you hit something and it goes asymmetric and you make a boatload of money. Think of PayPal, think of companies such as that. And of course, it's split up between small cap venture capital companies and large cap venture capital companies. The large cap being the ability to become $1 billion, multi-billion dollar company, or even $1 trillion company. And then just for fun here, for those of you guys who are aware of Dogecoin, the little Shiba Inu coin that everybody makes fun of in internet memes, you might put that at the top there. I never give financial advice on these types of things, but I would be confident in saying, please don't invest in Dogecoin or what are people calling it these days. I call it Dogecoin because it's a stupid investment, if you ask me. It was meant to be a bit of a joke, even by the founders there. But if you're looking for a little bit of fun, check out some Dogecoin, D-O-D-G-O-D-E. I don't even know how to spell it. Go look it up for yourself. So again, what I'm doing here is we're going to zero in on that bottom left-hand portion where that all that stuff is jumbled up there. And like I said, this is in the world of real estate type of investments. So again, still the same risk-reward matrix. You have on the bottom, you have the lower risk stuff. And by myself here, you have the higher risk stuff here. And as you move up on the y-axis, you go from 0 to 10 to 20 to 30%. These are about the normal annualized returns on these types of things people expect to see. The y-axis has changed slightly from that big picture. On this one, it was more equity multipliers, which is a lot bigger scale than what we have here from 0, 10, 20, 30%. If you're to extrapolate out where 100% a year would be at or to its equity multiplier, that would be off the chart here. So we're using a microscope and we're zeroing in very heavily here. Starting at the bottom left here, bonds, money market, you're making very low returns. And we talked about this on the last slide here. These things are your lazy money. You want to stop doing these types of traditional investments. REITs are just big institutional real estate investment funds where, again, the reason why we don't like these REITs and similar to mutual funds and other things here is there's a lot of bloat, a lot of hidden fees, a lot of times, and this is where we want to try and get away from. And this is where I introduce the line of you can do better, right? This is where I draw this arbitrary line of even if you're making higher returns with stocks, I think you can do better in the world of real estate. And then, of course, private equity as we're coming up later. This is basically what most people have in their standard, their sad American 401k retirement diet. And just fun here, right by my head, you have lending money to families and friends. That's more of a high risk type of investment, or I guess non-investment, because a lot of times you don't get your money back or they never pay you back any type of interest. So let's get into more of the what we'll call the normal money and more of the sophisticated type of money that I think some of you guys are more interested in and maybe have done yourself. So we'll start on this first level. A lot of people will start off in this world of they'll go to the local real estate meetup and they'll meet some house flippers and lend money to the house flippers. And they might lend their money at in a first lien position or a type of position where they're second lien, that you might get a little bit higher rate of return. And the investors may also get into the world of investing in performing notes and non-performing notes, where non-performing notes are a little bit more riskier, but you get a slightly higher return. Another low-risk effort is your day job. For a lot of folks, it is a rather low-risk type of endeavor. Yeah, you could get fired, but really, how many times has that happened over the last decade or two? With pretty low risk. Just put that in there. It's not necessarily getting any type of return unless you see getting promotions down the road. I just put that in there as it's a little bit more of a lower risk type of endeavor, because what's hard for a lot of new investors coming into the world of where they have to take ownership of their investment portfolio is to have a true understanding of risk. Like, what does risk feel? And as I talk about in my book in the conclusion chapter, a lot of this is we're trying to build a legacy. If the title of the book is for first generation multimillionaires, is we're the first generation going through this uncomfortable stage of investing in things that are outside the normal. And it doesn't take very long to get to where you want to be. And more than likely, if you set yourself up with a decade or two of doing this, with even if you're in your 50s, do that for a couple of decades in your 70s, you set your next offspring up to be in a pretty good state to inherit multi-million dollars of your estate. And the sad thing is that they don't have to know any of this. They don't have to understand and get comfortable with doing things that make them feel uncomfortable, that are outside their little dotted line of uncertainty. And to draw another analogy, I think a lot of us have heard in a different context that the saying of get outside your comfort zone, or amazing things happen outside your comfort zone. That's what that line of you can do better is essentially here. But moving out to the next stratosphere of investments, that I think a lot of us are familiar in the wealth elevator universe of real estate. You've got multifamily non-recourse syndications, turnkey rentals, you might get a little bit higher return there. But then this doesn't touch into the management headaches that you have with direct ownership of rentals, or if you're self-dealing with your performing or non-performing notes. The idea is to combo your investments with the least amount of headaches and work yourself, and of course, legal liability. And that's where multifamily value add, maybe developments, is you get a little bit higher return there. For those business owners, you know, you guys, I would put that up top as a moderate risk. If it's your business, you know it intimately, and you may feel like it's very low risk. Fair enough, each to their own, or your ideas is your realities. But for the most part, there is a huge range here, right? A lot of businesses go out of business. Sure, yours might be more mature, 5 years and older. But I just wanted to try to take a step at putting it on this matrix. It's obviously a little bit more risky than your average salary worker, especially working for the government. Although the salary worker could probably find another job in a few months, and so could you. So also keep that in mind there too. But I've talked to maybe thousands of you guys who booked that free onboarding call with myself, and we go over this, and I still enjoy doing those. So if you guys are new to the community, feel free to book that complimentary call with myself. But there's a couple of things that I've learned that I see as just like ultimate wealth building truths. The first thing is you cannot get to $2-3 million net worth by your 40th birthday, or for some of you guys, 50th birthday, unless you have crossed over that line of more than 50% of your assets in alternative investments. Basically, if you're investing in the normal stuff that we're all taught to, the stuff underneath the line of you can do better, it's very rare that I see people in that circumstance. The only exception, other than you're a trust fund kid and your parents gave you a couple $1 million to start the race off with, is you make a phenomenal salary, like $500,000, $1 million or greater. Some of the doctors are in this category. That's great for you. But as far as just looking at the data, looking at the thousands of people that come and we look at your personal situation, it's just not going to happen. If you think you're going to get your net worth to over $2, $3 million by the time you can actually still move around pretty well, maybe even hold your grandkids, you're smoking pot, right? Unless you have crossed over that line of more than 50% of your assets in alternative investments. Like, it's not going to happen. The second part is you're not going to get to eight figures net worth in your lifetime unless you start early, like investing in your 30s and maybe even 40s, and you start to implement this trifecta of strategies, which is alternative investments, saving money on taxes with these advanced strategies, and accredited investor infinite banking strategies. That is unless you own your own business. And you can get that business to at least $500,000 to $1 million of revenue. No, we're not talking about the little boba tea franchise or making a little online course on Udemy and making a few $1,000s a year. We're talking about a more riskier and business that produces real seven-figure plus revenue. Not to tell people like, hey, you can't do it, but I am, right? There is a sort of a glass ceiling for people. You're not going to get past $10 million net worth unless you have some type of business. That said, for most of us in our community, my goal is to get you folks to $4-5 million net worth by the time you can still pick up your grandchildren. For some of you guys are going to blast past that, right? Because you're starting in your 20s and 30s. But most of our clientele are in their mid 40s to early 50s. And that's, I'm talking about you guys. We want to get you to $4-5 million net worth. Why? That way you can get out of alternative investments and get back to safer traditional investments, and namely just put your money in lazy money type of investments, or put your money in your life insurance, which gets you about 5% tax-free and off the table litigators. That's where we want to get you once you've crested up after $3, $4, or $5 million net worth. You know, you're getting older. Let's be honest. You could pass away, unfortunately. I mean, you could go at 65, you could go at 75, which I would say for most guys out there, that's probably not a bad life expectancy. But the thing is, you could go and you could give this to your kids or your spouse, and they're not going to be as sophisticated with this type of stuff. To them, this is going to be like gobbledygook, and they're going to be like, what the heck was my husband or my wife doing on a Saturday listening to this guy on YouTube or this webinar or this podcast? Most of you guys listen to on the podcast. Who is this guy my spouse is listening to as they're like very obediently washing the dishes? Or at least that's what I do when I listen to my podcast, more audiobooks these days. But your spouse doesn't understand your crazy spreadsheets. It makes no sense to them, nor are they going to be able to be entrusted to invest your family's money into these alternative investments, namely on this upper level that we talked about here. Your family's wealth building ability generation mechanism is going to be going away if you were to unfortunately pass away. Now, how do you put this together, right? You build a portfolio of multiple holdings. One of the big rules I have is you never put more than 5 to 10% of your net worth into any one investment, and you break it up. This is maybe about 3-4 years old, but at one time, to help people visualize all this, I made a chart with Class A and Class C assets and deals that were more yield play and were more heavy value add reposition deals. Although that's a bit arbitrary way of labeling these types of deals, but I tried to maybe double the amount of investments on here. So that's why I stopped, because it just got to be ridiculous. And it just became an arbitrary type of exercise here because the investment sizes started to increase and then it just became a mess. But for purposes of here, this is what a portfolio should be looking like, right? You diversify your assets into different types of holdings. You're in dozens and dozens of deals. I've always said a good way of starting out thinking about this is if you're thinking all right, maybe I go into a private placement every quarter at $50,000, $100,000 a piece, just $100,000 to make math simple. All right, if I do four of those, because there's four quarters a year, that means I do $400,000 a year. And because most projects typically last five years, right? Some are shorter, some are longer, but let's just say average 5 years because this is generalization. If you put $400,000 into deals a year, and that's it's span over 5 years because you're expecting some of those deals to start to cash out at year five, then you've got $400,000 times five, you got $2 million of in the game. And if you've got a net worth of $3 million, that's a pretty good asset allocation mix right there. And you're diversified. And as these deals start to exit out, you don't really have to worry about having enough passive activity losses in your 8582 form. It really works on to implement that lazy 1031 exchange. But I think the biggest thing that is daunting for people is, I'll get into kind of this chart here, is like all these types of investments, they're new to people. And here's the analogy I like to use is sushi. Now, not a lot of people eat sushi out there in the general public, but those who have friends who have tried it alongside of you, you'll trick your friend into going into the California roll. It's imitation crab. It's cooked. And typically it's pretty yummy because it's essentially a sugar cube. The imitation crab is mostly carbohydrates, not really healthy for you, but it's yummy. And you pass them the tempura roll and then they like that because it's fried. But then you slip that spicy tuna in there, which is the first raw fish. And then they eat it and they're like, oh, this is good. And you say, hey, man, you just ate raw tuna. Congratulations. And they're begrudgingly, they're like, yeah, maybe I like this stuff. That's like me, right? When I was buying little rental properties, I stepped up in this manner. And then I bought rental properties out of state by 2015, eventually having 11 of these little turnkey rentals all managed remotely. Of course, it became a bit of a headache, right? Accredited investors typically dump their single family home rental properties because of the legal liability and they're just not scalable. And then transition into more of, I guess this would be making like the raw tuna and the spicy tuna, which a lot of people who are new to sushi, they tend to like, right? And this is getting into this, the multifamily value add type of deals. And then you're off to the races. And for people who know their sushi, you get into ikura, which is very expensive. And don't give your kids ikura. I gave my daughter a piece and hopefully she doesn't like it because it's super expensive. But then you've got like the uni, which is the sea urchin that comes after. And yeah, now you're getting into the good stuff, which is also super expensive. You want to be careful if you're conscious about how much you spend. But then again, if you're investing in real estate or alternative investments, you probably don't even care. That's what life's for, to spend money on these types of indulgences. Originally, and this is me changing my mind over a thing, I had three rules of investing: things that produce cash flow, things that we're able to leverage, which is all these things on this chart, because this chart represents real estate primarily, things that are backed by hard assets, at least the alternative investments portion above the line of you can do better. And they're obviously all hard assets. And just a couple of notes there. Gold, I'm not a huge fan of gold, is mainly sold by people, influencers on YouTube and bloggers that like to scare the crap out of you with fear porn that the world's gonna end and you should use this affiliate link to buy gold. Maybe I should do that because you always have people out there who think that they should have 5-10% of their net worth in gold, but their net worth is super low. It's like under $5 million. I'm like, dude, you got to have your money growing for you. Again, look at how the wealthy do it. They don't like gold. For the high net worth people, is like 1%. And they have the ability to have their money sit in hedge positions. You, on the other hand, need to get your money working. And sure, that may mean getting out of your comfort zone and taking on more risk. But this is what you got to do with a portion of your portfolio. And that's up to you, whether that's one third, one half of your portfolio, or what I did when I first got started with this in my 20s and early 30s. I was 80, 90% of alternative, I think, yeah, I was actually even 100% alternative investments. And that's what got me to where I'm at. And that's why I'm so passionate about this stuff. But if it's just getting you to 50%, I think I've done my job. But rounding out these rules, cryptocurrency, what I don't like about it, doesn't produce number one, which is cash flow, doesn't have any utility in society is my other big angst about it. And when you start to become a value investor, you need to have your investment rubric. You need to understand what resonates with you. And for me, cryptocurrency doesn't really resonate with me because what good is it? It's not like you even have a bag of coins I could hit somebody with. And at this point, there's not a really good safe way to get leverage on it. This is why we like real estate, because think about it, because the banks vouch for it. The banks give great leverage on real estate. So this is that world that I was in for a long time. And up until a few years ago, I never really ventured outside of my comfort zone. But as I want to try and model for everybody, you have to constantly keep growing, right? That's what the growth mindset is. If you read that book, the whole concept of getting outside your comfort zone and keep pushing it. And that kind of brings me to, all right, we try and bust out of the real estate world, which is now it's zoomed out. You can't even read what it is now, but that's where you get into these other types of investment strategies and asset classes. More risk, but heck of a lot more return. So how do people balance this in their portfolio? It's all in the dosage here. And this is it labeled here. We have the traditional investments with the trash can emoji right there. And then the real estate investments that are here, which normally around institutional operators, maybe you're looking to double your money in 10 years. These are the guys who have higher splits and fees where you're not going to grow your money super aggressively. Most good operators, that the trouble is like figuring out who are the fake it to make it operators under $1 billion of assets under ownership and who are more the middle market operators. That's a little bit more of the harder part. And what we're going to be doing for those of you guys who are interested in joining our family office, Ohana Mastermind Group, we're going to be ingrained more these days into we've been analyzing different passive investing deals. For a lot of you guys have access to the syndication LPE course. If you haven't yet, go to or just shoot our team an email. We have the new portal set up. Takes most people 8 to 10 hours to go through. We're not charging that for $3,000, $4,000. To get access to that. We're just giving that away. Most people, when they go to that course, they know more than most accredited investors out there. To be quite honest, most accredited investors are not super sophisticated. But once they do become higher net worth, they actually employ professional underwriters and real estate people on their behalf to help them make the right decisions. But unfortunately, a lot of you guys aren't there yet. You're not to $10 to $30 million net worth to get these people on your payroll quite yet. So this is the hardest part, and this is why I like to help people who are in this difficult position. As I was in 2000 when I made the switch, sure, I knew single family homes and I knew how to dance with real estate, but I was out of my element investing in this world of private placements and syndications with all these operators who I didn't know who was trustworthy and who were just good marketers. And as I've chronicled a lot of times, lost money. The first time, the article, if you want to read into the details, that's thewealthelevator.com/fail. I lost 40 grand on that. And I didn't know what I knew now, but the more important thing, I didn't have a community and a network around me at the time. But over the last, and we started the group back in 2018, we have that community. Of course, you're gonna have to pay to play, right? If you're interested in that community, go to thewealth.com/FOM, which stands for the Family Office Ohana Mastermind. But we're gonna be taking a look at deals a lot more in detail there. And of course, that's all through confidentiality and kind of behind closed doors. If not, the syndication LPE course, that's the free method right there. But you're on your own in terms of vetting your own deals to invest in. Once you've gotten comfortable into real estate deals, and you may want to take a swing at a home run once a while, and that's where you move off to these different types of investments. Something that I've seen from myself and a lot of people who I started investing with back in the day, they don't leave real estate. They still have real estate as a majority of their alternative investment portfolio, but they eventually definitely do branch out. And for a lot of these people, again, just to set the expectations, alternative investment portfolio is more than half of their traditional investment portfolio. And again, if you're under $2 to $3 million net worth, I think your portfolio needs to be even more slighted towards alternative investments. And again, like I said, like with my portfolio, when I was in my 20s and now I guess I'm exiting my 30s, it was majority of it, vast majority alternative investments. Now, this may mean for a lot of you guys who were good Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts who listened to all the directions, put a lot into your 401k, which is just the way that they handcuff you to go into traditional investments. You may need to crack open that million and a half in your 401k that's trapped in the public equities and get it out. I think maybe in a future office hours, we'll talk more about, does it make sense to have any type of IRA, self-directed IRA, solo 401k, or any QRP, qualified retirement plan? Infinite banking, accredited investor banking. It uses a specially configured whole life policy that doesn't have the high fees, and it's configured more for you to be able to overfund it. A lot of you guys are very familiar with the strategy, but how do you use that strategy in terms of the flow of your money? We'll start here on the left side. First, you're trading time for money, right? You're working hard. You're working at your business or your job. You're making money there. Most people in our community, you guys are saving $50,000 to $100,000 a year at least, which everybody spends between maybe their expenses or their burn rate that they spend is maybe a third or a half at the very least. But that's really what I key in on some of my intro calls with you guys is I don't care what you make, whether it's $500,000, $1 million. It's more what you are able to save at the end of the year. And I think the prerequisite to getting involved in a lot of these strategies is saving that base level $50,000 a year. This is the trick. You funnel that into your accredited investor banking or traditional infinite banking policy first, and then you take a loan from yourself, and then you put that into your investments as opposed from going from your pocketbook straight to investments. This way, your money is growing in two places, which is your accredited investor or traditional infinite banking policy and your investments. So you're double dipping there. In my new book, I introduce a strategy on how you're able to triple dip this with some security-backed lines and credits and equities, but I didn't want to overcomplicate this slide here. The investments, this is where patience comes into play. You've got to wait for the cash flow or the exits to start to happen, but that's what produces the cash flow or big dumps of cash from investments, as our friend here who's playing around with this cash. At this point, it's again up to you what you want to do with the money. If your net worth is past $4 to $5 million, the arrow comes to ironically where my head is at. This is the come down here. This is a nonstop vacation mode. The guy's jumping off into the water. You can live your life and have some fun at this point and maybe put all your money in back to those traditional investment options and just relax. Or you can start to invest more, right? Which is that dotted line optional, invest more, put it back to more investments. Another option, which most people won't do until they hit that end game level or $10 million net worth, is then they go back and pay back the loan, which is depicted by that arrow on the top. But this is essentially the way the money flows when you use your privatized banking system set up. And the cool thing is when it's once you load it into your accredited investor banking, your traditional investment banking policy, at that point, your money is a lot more safer. Without a complicated irrevocable trust, your money is off the tables of litigators and creditors at this point once it's in that system. And then the making the money in two places at once, in the green box, the AIB, and the purple box, the investments. And this is the way that you should be funneling all your investments through, whether that's in the realm of real estate or if you choose to venture out into other types of investments. But ideally, things that are higher than your normal money type of investments. If this is new to you, go to thewealthelevator.com/bank, and there you can get signed up for the free 2 to 3 hours. It takes most people to go through the how to set up your own privatized bank. And this is where you're getting into more of the sophisticated type of money. To get into that family office type of money or where the real numbers are getting created, this is not accessible to everybody. If you're somebody who just sits at home and doesn't get connected with other purely passive accredited investors, you're not going to get access to these types of deals. This is where I spend a lot of money interacting with the right people, joining the right groups. Obviously, the platform a lot of you guys, we can write a $5 million check to a lot of these deals, and this opens up a lot of realms. You're probably looking into investing in syndications and private placements as an accredited investor, or maybe you're already attuned to the jockey and the horse analogy. This is what I call the horse and the jockey analogy 2.0. The people, the operator is the jockey and the horse is the deal. So a lot of people, they'll start off and they'll go through that syndication e-course, which if you want access to that, just shoot our team an email, team@thewealthelevator.com, and we'll get you set up there in the portal. But they'll go through that e-course and it's pretty lengthy, and especially the number section where we go through the reversion cap rate. What's a good assumption for full occupancy? They can at least sniff out the garbage deals, the sucker deals out there. The next thing that people will get to is the bonus section, which is the nice little rubric, the due diligence checklist, which weights a lot of these aspects in a composite score to evaluating the deal as a whole. But most people get to a holistic point where it's like, all right, I know a lot. I'm a lot more confident now. I at least know a lot of things I wasn't even completely aware of initially. And I feel comfortable with this. At the end of the day, the syndicators, the operators, they have skin in the game. They don't make money unless we make money. And if you work with honest people, it's a kumbaya situation. And that's why I like the whole spirit of these deals that are structured in a way where the GP gets a share of the upside, right? So they're incentivized to perform. People go to the syndication e-course and most LPs will be like, all right, I just got to work with honest people, join the family office on a mastermind group to figure out who those honest people are. And that's just where they're like, all right, I can somewhat vet the deal and the people. And in the analogy, the people, the operator you're going to be working with is the jockey and the horse is the deal, right? I've been given some tools to evaluate the horse and the jockey. And there's people are in different camps. I'm a little bit more neutral in terms of some people think that the horse is more important, right? If you have a deal that is under market rents by $300, $400 and you've got a very clear value add strategy, you can have an idiot running that horse. As long as that idiot is an honest person, doesn't steal money, then this race is going to go fine. Other people who are less comfortable with the numbers, I think that maybe this is the consensus out there that people say the jockey is more important, the operator is more important. I think people say that because they're just not able to even understand the numbers on a cursory level. Therefore, evaluating the force or the numbers or the deal in this analogy, they don't understand. So they're going to focus in on what kind of makes sense to them and what is the statistics on the jockey or the operator, right? So in my opinion, I think you look at both. And I've always said what I used to do is I would focus on the deal first because I can evaluate the deal. Then I go look at the operator, and you can ask the operator a gazillion questions. It's just all going to be lies at the end of the day. At the end of the day, you need to meet other purely passive accredited investors. And that's why you join like a mastermind like ours to figure out who are the legit operators out there other than the manufactured real estate groupies and gurus out there. But I'll introduce where this analogy goes 2.0, other than the horse and the jockey, you also have the track, which is indicative of the market. Most times it's a good time to be racing out there. It's sunny, you have a bit of a trade winds at your back. And that was indicative of the market in 2010 for more than a decade to 2022. And then in 2023, that was when you had a huge correction. In my next quarterly report, there was an article in commercial real estate. Commercial real estate got hit harder in 2023 than in 2008. Now, not many people talk about it because in 2008, the big thing was the single family home residential world, where the commercial real estate really didn't have the huge impact it was today. That speaks to commercial real estate went through its biggest correction in the last, three decades here. So now's the time to be getting in. But even if you picked a good horse and a good jockey, because the track wasn't good, this is another aspect that you as an investor need to evaluate. And the way to get around this is just to constantly dollar cost average, like how they teach you in the traditional investment world, constantly be going into deals and spanning over 4 to 7 years. Personally, that's how a lot of our deals made it through as a portfolio, because we are investing and established before the 2023 market correction. And that's what I would urge all passive investors to do, and diversify. Don't just go into one, two, three deals. You got to get into a lot more. There's a fourth aspect to this, which is the guys in the stable, the guys who take care of the horse. And in this situation, the investor base that are investing in the deal, not many people talk about the guys back in the stable who take care of the horse, nor when people evaluate a deal, they take a look at the passive investor base. A lot of these deals these days that a lot of you guys see are put together by retail type of investors, guys that don't have the ability to put in money in a capital call to be able to get the deal to where it needs to be. Obviously, on the opposite end of the spectrum, institutional type of deals where little private investors are not able to get into, this is where their advantage comes into play. Seemingly an infinite amount of money to put into a deal to right sizing and set the sales to better days. But this is where we've consciously as a group, especially as we move into more other asset classes outside of multifamily, to get involved with other partners where the passive investor base is a lot stronger than your typical retail investor base out there. Why? Exactly what I'm saying. When a storm comes, the passive investors can do their equity commitment and bridge the deal to the other side. Because the nice thing about real estate is the price doesn't go to zero, unlike a stock. The equity may dip 20%, but the price doesn't really go back down to zero. So if you're able to get into these deals with that next level people, where the investors are maybe about $5, $10 million at least, and you're in these situations where you're able to, if there's trouble, somebody just writes a few million dollar check and we're off on our way. And what I call this kind of rung is the semi-institutional office type of level, where experienced operators who've done well over $1 billion of assets under ownership, and their investor base and the ownership group is well capitalized to get over these types of humps. And this is where I would say in past 2020, we as a group have graduated to, we've gotten access to this type of level of deals out there. So that's the analogy. You got the horse and the jockey, you've got the racetrack and this other aspect of deals. And I think you guys are going to start to see this come out in some of the deal opportunities that are coming out here and some of the income fund opportunities too, right? Access to better operators. And just to give you a sense, right? A lot of these operators, you may want to think about investing directly. And yeah, if you want a connection, we're more than welcome to give it to you. But a lot of these guys won't want to mess with you unless you're investing more than $500,000 check, right? Because that's just, they just don't want to deal with retail type of investors who won't have less than $5 million net worth that are going to give them a hard time for their $100,000 investment. And those are the people that we want to work with in the future. Not the past investors, but the in terms of the operators. Think of like a semi-institutional industrial operator or a assisted living operator. There's a lot of these guys out there that have done this for years all by themselves, and they're well capitalized as an operator. And if we're able to work a deal with them where we can bring in our investors as one big check, that's where we're going to get access to these great operators who, sure, they don't like talking to passive investors, but this is where you're able to get access to better deal operators and better deals and get out of that world of operators operating with less than $1 billion of assets under ownership. But with that, I think we've hit the top of the hour. Thank you all for coming, and we'll see you guys next time.
The proceeding is not tax, legal, or investment advice, nor an offer to sell securities or investment products. Always make informed decisions with professional guidance. Get educated and surround yourself with a community at thewealthelevator.com/club.